tomorrow?
You're not coming on the weekend?
Called the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee to order. Welcome, everyone. We are going to start today with House Bill 2970, opening a public hearing thereon. Thank you. Chris.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2970 creates a work group with the purpose of expanding the number of eligible taxpayers claiming the earned income credit. Basically, it's an outreach program. The work group shall be within the Interagency Council on Hunger and Homelessness, and the work group is required to promote and facilitate interdepartmental collaboration to develop education and outreach strategies to ensure that taxpayers who are eligible for the credit do claim it, and that they know about it, and that they know of any free tax preparation assistance that might be available. It requires the work group to develop recommendations to ensure that state agencies maximize the use of the credit, and requires the work group to report its finding to the legislature, to an interim committee, by October 1 of each year. And it repeals, the bill is repealed on January 2nd, 2012.
Okay, and we were honored with the presence of Representative Nathanson. And did you want to come up with Mike or by yourself? Or
okay. Together is fine. That may save you some time.
Perfect. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Nancy Nathanson, State Representative for District 13. The Federal Earned Income Credit was enacted in 1975 with the goal of refunding payroll taxes to certain kinds of low-income taxpayers. The Oregon EIC follows the same pattern as the federal EIC and piggybacks on it. I do want to mention that there are also efforts to increase the size of the Earned Income Credit, and this bill is not meant to supplant or be a substitute for those efforts. This is a complementary effort. Either one of those stands alone. They each have a purpose, and this is not meant to substitute at all. Nearly two-thirds of families who receive Oregon's EIC earn less than $20,000 a year. So this morning, this afternoon, I'd like to talk about the people who are not receiving the credit. The number of people eligible to receive the credit would be called the participation rate or the rate of utilization. Not everyone who is eligible to receive it is receiving it, and there are various reasons. Primarily, as we have come to understand over the years and also with the analysis from legislative revenue, some people just simply don't file a return. They think that they earn so little money that they don't need to file a return. And if you don't file a return, then you can't claim this credit that is due to you. Other people file returns and don't understand that they can claim the credit. Either way, there is certainly money that could be coming into Oregon that isn't. As a member of Ways and Means, I've been keenly aware of this kind of problem and have been speaking for quite a while about needing to increase and maximize the amount of federal money coming into Oregon. We leave way too much on the table, and this is another example of federal money that could be coming to Oregon to directly help families who need it or individuals. It would help Oregonians directly, plus then when you've brought the money into the state, of course, it recirculates and it has that value of coming in and being used here, because the money is used for buying goods and services, to pay rent. It's helping the Oregon economy. So what is the participation rate, and can we influence it? The Legislative Revenue Office advises that while precise reasons for not claiming the credit are known with certainty, there is evidence to suggest that most of the eligible non-claimants are not filing tax returns. There is also some research that indicates that a large share of EIC recipients, people who are claiming the credit, are using a tax preparer to file their return. So to the extent that people understand that help is available, it might be that the costs associated with using a professional preparer may be discouraging filing a tax return, so provides some disincentive. However, there is free tax assistance available through tax aid, which AARP orchestrates, and through other sectors. Children First for Oregon says, quote, all of the state and federal tax credits available to families and businesses are underutilized. An estimated 25% of families eligible for the EITC do not file and receive their benefits. Oregonians for Working Families tells us, quote, by helping publicize the EITC, you can help your constituents access tax credits they deserve. No eligible Oregonian should miss out on the EITC or other tax credits. And finally, we hear from Oregon's Hunger Relief Task Force, quote, increasing the state EITC percentage will help low-wage workers and our state. Low-income families often live paycheck to paycheck. Tax relief will be spent on food, housing, health care, and utilities. The federal EIC is important for about 1 out of 7 Oregon families. For the 2006 tax year, the federal EIC returned to Oregon was $362.5 million. For that tax year, over 206,000 families claimed the EITC. But that 206,000 is only about 72% of those people eligible. If we could achieve a 10% increase in usage, there is the potential for another 20,500 claimants, bringing in an additional nearly $36 million federal dollars to Oregon. So what this bill does is it provides clear direction to state agencies to work together with each other and with community organizations to collaborate and to increase the number of Oregonians claiming the EITC. We have several state agencies that already do this to some extent that do or can provide information, and a number of private organizations that do. What we don't have is a coordinated, concerted effort, a collaborative approach to get the word out to make sure that we are maximizing the use of our dollars and that we are decreasing duplication of effort around the state and within state agencies. We should be able to achieve economies of scale for printing and publicizing. We should eliminate duplication of effort as each organization and each state agency writes and rewrites materials, each on its own. And we should be sure that taxpayers hear about free tax assistance that's available to them. Oregon's Hunger Relief Task Force tells us, quote, Oregon's tax system is hardest on low-wage workers. The answer is the earned income tax credit. So I would like to help them and the Interagency Council on Hunger and Homelessness do their job and do it as best they can. And through that, we'll help more Oregon families. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Nathanson, and I want to thank you for your work on this. I know you've been working on this a long time and have come up with good strategies. Before we get to Mr. Leachman, we don't have a fiscal on this, and could you tell us how we can? We have a fiscal statement, but it was my understanding we didn't have fiscal impact. Got to get my terminology straight. Can you just share with us how you were able to pull this off to have this activity without a fiscal impact?
There was quite a bit of discussion. There was a suggestion, for example, that there should be staffing associated with it and additional costs. It's my belief that since we are already spending time and effort in various state agencies doing some of these things, but in an uncoordinated approach, there is duplication of effort. The Interagency Council on Hunger and Homelessness already has an annual fall meeting where the departments and community organizations come together to collaborate to decide strategies to address hunger and homelessness. I believe that through that annual meeting that already occurs, this type of collaboration can be initiated, and that because there will be some decrease in duplication of effort, that we really come out probably without spending a lot of extra time, but actually getting a lot more yield for the hours that are spent.
Thank you. Any questions for Representative Nathanson? So you are, oh, go ahead, Senator.
Thank you for your work on this. As a person who deals with tax returns, we don't have a whole lot of tax returns that we do that have the earned income tax credit, but I am on the board and work with a nonprofit in Central Oregon, Partnership to End Poverty. This has been on my case about making sure I support this. And they are doing good work in this area. And so I know there are a lot of nonprofit organizations throughout the state, and it would, in fact, be nice to have them coordinated. Two things, though. I would say that there are a lot more people filing now because of the federal stimulus. They want to get the federal stimulus check. But it doesn't also mean that they're getting the earned income tax credit, because the calculation is cumbersome, difficult, unwieldy, to the point where if a preparer does calculate one and put it on a tax return, there's this whole worksheet that we also have to attach, and a statement that says we have actually done this, so that there's no fraud. There's been a lot of fraud, I guess. So it's an interesting credit that is so cumbersome that the people who really need to utilize it can't. So I commend you for your efforts. But I, like I say, I do know there's a large number of nonprofits throughout the state that are working with this, and it would be nice to have them coordinated.
Thank you, Senator Jeff. Thank you. Senator Rosenbaum, do you have anything?
Now that you ask. Madam Chair, as the members know, I am a big advocate of the earned income tax credit, and I do appreciate Representative Nathanson's work on this. There are efforts locally. Groups like Cash Oregon have done really good work at helping people apply for this and take advantage of it, but I think more could always be done. And I also appreciate Representative Nathanson saying that this is not a substitute for our other efforts to expand the credit.
So we appreciated that. Thank you. Okay. Now, you are free to stay or leave while the others testify. I know you might be busy, so we will not be offended if you choose to leave.
Thank you very much, and thank you for allowing me to speak.
Thank you. Mr. Leachman.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, I'm Mike Leachman. I'm with the Oregon Center for Public Policy. First, I just want to thank Representative Nathanson for her dogged efforts on this. It's really important that this issue be pushed forward. She's really been a champion. I think it's especially important to us at OCPP. We have a history of working on outreach on the earned income credit, besides working for its improvement of the credit itself. Several years ago, we had ourselves a statewide outreach effort that we were doing, obviously much too small. We're too small of an organization to make to build a campaign that we really need. But especially because we have that history, we understand the importance of outreach and appreciate Representative Nathanson's efforts. So the problem here is twofold. One is that while there are some good local efforts, Cash Oregon is one in the Portland metro area. There's a good system being run through the United Way in Lane County and some others. There's no coordination of these efforts. Different state agencies do some outreach, but there's no coordination of those efforts, and so we have duplication of translation costs, of printing costs, of just the time spent thinking through how to frame the issue, how to make sure that people get the message. We also have no place where people are getting together to think about how do we improve the overall system. The Department of Revenue has a call line where you can call in and get information about applying for the credit, but it's very difficult to maneuver, to understand. We at OCPP don't think it's very accessible for low-income families and can be improved. So that's the sort of thing that a coordinated effort could do. Also, obviously, as Representative Nathanson mentioned, it just maximizes the federal dollars coming to Oregon. But another thing is that, you know, several of the credits that we have in Oregon that are more geared towards higher income people are broadly marketed. If you think, for example, about the business energy tax credit and the residential energy tax credit, the energy office markets those credits. The cultural trust markets the tax credit that's available for donations to the cultural trust. Candidates, as you know, promote use of the political contribution tax credit. Unfortunately, credits for low-income working families don't get that sort of support. They don't have that kind of. We don't have an agency that's coordinating, that's really pushing the marketing for credits that help low-income families. Representative Nathanson mentioned, and I want to reiterate that this is not should not be considered a substitute for increasing the size or improving the Oregon small EITC. And I wouldn't want anybody to get the impression that we have a participation rate problem with the EITC that needs to be addressed before we can think about improving the credit itself. You know, the data isn't available to let us nail down precisely what share of eligible families are getting the credit. But the research indicates that the best research that we have is that nationally the participation rate is somewhere in the 75 to 85% range. There's the best study that we have at the state level, although it's very difficult to get this nailed down at the state level, but the best study that we have suggests that Oregon is probably in the top of that range. Inconclusive, but suggests that that's true. We're probably looking at a participation rate in the 80% range. A lot of the people who are not getting the credit are folks who are not filing. They're not earning enough income to file, and so they're not getting the credit for that reason. We should keep in perspective what we're talking about here. It is nevertheless very important that we do have a strong statewide outreach campaign that makes sure that everybody who's eligible for this credit gets it. These are people who can use the help. It's also federal money coming into the state, which helps our economy. I'd like to make a couple of suggestions for the bill. Some language that we would prefer be built into the bill. In general, we think this is a good bill. We don't want to hold it up, but we would like to see the bill have a couple of changes. One is that there's in section 1.2 of the bill, the language says that the work group shall promote and facilitate interdepartmental collaboration and may invite participation by community organizations addressing similar issues. We think it's really crucial that ICHH, the Interagency Coordinating Council on Hunger and Homelessness, collaborate with community organizations that are already doing outreach. And so it would be our preference that the language say that the interdepartmental collaboration shall, instead of saying may, shall invite participation by community organizations. In addition, we've noticed that the ICHH does not include the Department of Revenue, and we think the Department of Revenue is important. It's important to consult with the Department of Revenue in building a good statewide outreach effort. And so we would suggest that in that same line it could say the work group shall promote and facilitate interdepartmental collaboration and shall consult with the Department of Revenue and invite participation by community organizations addressing similar issues. So I think that's a pretty minor a change, one that while we don't want the bill to not happen for this reason, we do think it's important that language be added. Secondly, we think it would be our preference for this bill to create a stronger statewide outreach effort for not just the EITC, but for all state and federal tax credits that help low-income working families. The Working Family Child Care Credit, for example, is one that some groups have promoted, but the promotion efforts there are not being coordinated well with the broader EITC outreach that's happening. The Federal Child Tax Credit, for example, is another one that we want to encourage everybody to take advantage of who is eligible. So those would be our preferences. And the last point I want to make is simply that, we think that the agencies should be doing this anyway. The ICHH is set up to address hunger and homelessness, and promoting these kinds of credits is right down the alley of that agenda. We think, and the ICHH has their agenda is flexible about exactly how they go about doing their work. We think this could be built in, and that, they could bring in the Department of Revenue and sit down and do it. Unfortunately, that hasn't been happening, and that's why the bill is necessary. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Have you talked to Representative Nathanson about your proposed changes?
I have, although I have to say that we've been thinking about this very recently. Representative Nathanson is concerned that that the bill that this not make it so that the bill gets caught up in all the things that are going on in the legislative process and not happen.
Yeah, it is May 14th. Senator Telfer.
Well, if a group were to get together, such as in Section 1 and 2, it would just make sense that they would automatically, you would think, want to include community organizations as well as the department. Again, I wouldn't want to delay the bill in dash ones given the time frame here, but is there a way that the legislature can kind of pass that intention along? That definitely rely on your local nonprofits that are working on this throughout the state, as well as the Department of Revenue, who obviously has it on one of their little forms called 40. But
Senator Telfer, I can answer that. The carrier statement is something that the court, if it ever came to that, would look at.
Okay.
In terms of interpreting it. I think it's, I'm satisfied that this bill accomplishes the kind of consultation that the sponsor is after. This might be a different discussion if this had been brought up earlier and in consultation with the sponsor. Any other questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chair Burdick. Thank you, members of the committee.
Mr. Bennett.
Good afternoon, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. For the record, Rick Bennett representing AARP. We just wanted to indicate our support as well. I think Representative Nathanson and Mike Leachman have provided strong testimony related to the importance of the earned income tax credit. In keeping with the spirit of the bill, I won't duplicate their comments and at least give the appearance of having coordinated my comments with theirs. Certainly we support this bill expanding the utilization of the earned income tax credit is a good thing, as well as trying to coordinate the efforts of both governmental as well as non-governmental entities. AARP Foundation's tax aid program, just briefly, is a program that's available to low to middle income taxpayers, special attention being given to those 60 and older. In 2008, over 33,000 volunteers assisted almost 3 million taxpayers in filing their federal, state, and local tax returns at over 6,700 sites nationwide. Last year, we celebrated our 40th anniversary as the nation's largest free volunteer-run assistance and preparation organization. And Section 1, Subsection 2, the language has already been noted, related to the convened work group and that they may invite participation. Obviously, we would certainly hope that they would do so and that AARP's tax aid leadership be included in those discussions. Thank you.
Just think, in only 10 years, tax aid can join AARP.
We're very close.
Any questions for Mr. Bennett?
Thank you.
Thank you so much. We're going to close anybody else want to talk on this? paragraph.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan with the Department of Revenue. Madam Chair, we would be more than pleased to participate in discussions on how the outreach can work. Our focus might be a little bit different because what we want to make sure is that the credits are correctly claimed. And if they are, then that helps to reduce our workload and our interaction with taxpayers to correct erroneously claimed credits. So it's not only because we do not want to be called out in the October 1 report as does not play well with others, but also because we think it can help our operations as well as taxpayers who are entitled to the credits. So we're more than happy to do it even if the bill does not specify that they shall consult us.
Okay, great. Well, we all assume that Department of Revenue would be involved because our motto should be don't get people into more trouble than they started out in.
Exactly. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Deborah. Any questions before? Okay, thank you. We will close the public hearing on House Bill 2970 and open a work session on House Bill 2970. Senator Rosenbaum.
Yes, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2970 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Rosenbaum has moved House Bill 2970 to the Senate floor with a do-pass recommendation. Discussion? Objection? So ordered. Senator Rosenbaum, would you like to carry this?
I'd be pleased to.
Okay, now we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2308.
Good afternoon, Madam.
Good afternoon, Chair, members of the committee. April 14th, as you said.
It's actually May 14th, Madam. Oh. We wish sometimes that it were April 14th.
I should know that.
It's actually true.
June 14th.
Yeah, actually, we wish it were. You're correct. I stand corrected, Senator Telfer.
Well, today is the sum of the month and the year, Madam Chair. So.
The sum of the month and the year.
Okay,
now you have to tell us about that. So these economists.
It's 14 of May. And 09, so if you add 5 and 9, you get 14.
Oh.
That too much time on your hands.
Very heavy. We need to get this man some work. Okay.
I see. Okay. Let me fix that. Engrossed House Bill 2308 is a bill that came from the two committees in the House. But actually... Your revenue committee on the other side, on the House side, amended this bill. How it started is that it allows a trustee, personal representative or executor to apply for the Oregon Department of Revenue. This is concerning inheritance tax owed and to allow for a discharge from further tax liability to be issued following the payment and determination of that tax. The amendment that occurred in the House and made it an A engrossed is to extend the time for that process to happen between the time of the determination of the tax payment and then the release or personal release for the representative. From 9, we amended that to 18 months. And that to allow also time for DOR to apply for new requirements. And this bill started and originated from the Oregon State Bar, the state tax section, I believe, and state tax planning section. And as we looked at it, it had a very minimal fiscal impact. And as it is ended up in the A engrossed version, does not have a revenue impact.
Does not have a revenue impact. Okay. All right. Well, we have Jeff Moore from the State Bar to explain this to us. As former chair of Judiciary, I think I want to particularly welcome our friends of the bar, without whom we could not get through some of these issues.
Well, thank you. Chair Burdick and members of the committee, my name is Jeff Moore. I'm with the law firm of Saufeld Griggs and here on behalf of the Oregon State Bar Executive Committee for the Estate Planning Administration Section and in support of House Bill 2308. Let me give just a little bit of context and then why the purpose behind this bill and then I think the benefits of it. First, there was an estate tax, federal estate tax, and in essence, the federal government collected the estate tax and then gave a portion of it to the state of Oregon. I mean, that's a simplified explanation, but that's basically how it used to be. As you may know, Oregon has decoupled from the federal estate tax system. And so now we have the federal estate tax system, and we have the Oregon inheritance tax system. The federal system requires a 706 estate tax return, and the Oregon Department of Revenue requires an Oregon IT-1 inheritance tax return. The problem is that Oregon Department of Revenue, or Oregon, would rely and sort of piggyback on many of the federal rules and regulations regarding the estate tax. One of those sections in the Internal Revenue Code is Section 2204, and this bill is really meant to say that if somebody has filed an estate tax return and has made a payment, that they can be discharged of personal liability if, in essence, 18 months has passed and there's been no word of an audit or review from the Oregon Department of Revenue. And to apply a statutory limitation of 3 years so that personal representatives and trustees, the fiduciaries handling these cases, aren't perpetually on the line with personal liability. And so that's a little bit of the context. And in many situations, I'll just give an example of a case I'm working on right now. Four siblings, both parents have passed away. They have filed an estate tax or an inheritance tax return. It has been about a year and a half since the return has been filed. And so a little over 2 years since surviving parent has passed away. But they have not made the final distributions because the sister, who is acting as trustee, is very concerned that one of the other siblings may raise some issues. I mean, and so she doesn't want to do anything until she has a closing letter in hand stating that we've accepted the tax return, you don't owe any more money, you're good to go. Now, if she goes ahead and distributes that money without a closing letter and then subsequently is approached by one of these government agencies saying you owe some more money, we know pretty well that it's going to be very difficult to get the money from those siblings. That said, the trustee is personally responsible for that deficiency. And so what happens is we get into this stalemate. Whether it's family members, friends, or others, corporate institutions who don't want to distribute without this closing letter. Now, in this particular case, a federal return was filed. And I've been filing these returns for about 11 years. I typically get a federal return, a closing letter, I would say between 9 and 18 months. And there is a federal statute limitations of 3 years. So there is some closure in that system. But unfortunately, the Oregon Department of Revenue doesn't have that statutory authority to issue those closing letters. So House Bill 2308 basically gives that authority to the Oregon Department of Revenue that if a personal representative or trustee requests this discharge, then after that 18-month period, they are discharged from personal liability. There's still taxes owed. The estate still is responsible for that, but that personal liability is discharged. That will streamline the administration. That puts some closure to a case, particularly in the situation since federal estate tax returns no longer have to be filed if the estate is under $3.5 million as of the beginning of this year. It's a big amount of money. But for Oregon, it remains $1 million. So the number of state returns that are being filed where federal returns are not, and therefore no closing letter from the IRS, and some comfort that it's been settled, This problem is going to continue to increase because Oregon Department of Revenue is going to be the only source of closure. And so we support this because it gives the Oregon Department of Revenue that statutory authority to close the case and allow the families to move on. Deborah Buchanan of the Oregon Department of Revenue has worked closely on the drafting of this bill. The Oregon Department of Revenue is in support of it. It has a minimal fiscal impact, and it has a great impact for personal representatives, trustees, and corporations who are acting in these fiduciary roles. And I think it's a good thing for Oregon, now that we've decoupled from the feds, to have a similar closure procedure for the Oregon Department of Revenue. So thank you. If there's any questions,
very
I'm happy
much.
To answer them.
Actually, you made it very clear. If there are questions from the committee? Every time something comes up on estates, I get prepared to get completely confused, but you actually were quite clear.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Deborah, could I ask you to come up and join him? Because I have a couple of questions that you might want to participate in, too. So basically, the problem is that the Department of Revenue, even if they wanted to issue a closing letter, could not issue one under existing statute.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan with the Department of Revenue. That was an excellent summary of the situation. What has happened is we used to issue these letters in the past, and at that time we were so closely connected to the federal system that the statute that required us to issue the letters was repealed. It was deemed just not necessary because of that close connection to the federal filing and the federal tax. Mm-hmm. So the statute went away that required us to issue the letters, and then came the point where we disconnected from the federal system. We no longer had the requirement to send the letters or the authority to send the letters. And added to that was the repeal of the gift tax statutes, I believe in 95 or 97. When that was done, conforming amendments in Chapter 180, which is the estate or inheritance tax chapter, inadvertently repealed the statute of limitations on deficiencies and refunds. So the combination of those things has led to the situation that we have today.
Okay, so basically your statute of limitations is 3 years?
Madam Chair, under this bill, it would be 3 years. Currently, there is no statute of limitations on either deficiencies or refunds for estates.
So you are basically going to issue these closing letters within 18 months, but your statute of limitations is 3 years. How does that?
Madam Chair, as I understand it, the statute of limitations would be the same as what applies to individual income taxes. So within 3 years of receiving a return, we could audit the return, and if we determine an asset was undervalued, for example, issue a notice of deficiency. If it's been 18 months and we have issued a letter, that letter relieves the personal representative of personal liability, but it doesn't relieve the estate itself of being liable for the additional tax.
So how would you collect that? I mean, in a case like this where there was a lot between the lines in your story about these four siblings, in a case like that where you had siblings who maybe weren't on the same page, shall we say, how would you go about collecting?
Madam Chair, it's my understanding that we would have to go to the assets, the people who received the assets of the estate, in order to collect the tax that the estate is liable for.
Madam Chair, that's basically what would happen, but what would happen is they would start with the fiduciary. I mean, under a legal obligation, the fiduciary has that responsibility. The responsibility then becomes the fiduciary's to go after the siblings and collect the funds.
So the fiduciary is the same as the personal representative?
Yeah, a fiduciary I use to basically be refer to either the personal representative in a will plan or a probate or a trustee of a trust. So both of them are fiduciaries.
Okay. But with the letter of closure, they wouldn't have personal liability.
Correct.
They would still have the responsibility to collect them.
Correct. And technically, those assets should be paid from the estate prior to distribution. But it doesn't relieve the estate of that responsibility.
Okay, all right.
And I might, Madam Chair, if I can add one thing, with the statute of limitations, I think that that's a good fallback as well. because not only is it similar to the statute of limitations for the federal estate tax and the Oregon income tax, but this 18-month personal liability discharge is an affirmative action required by the fiduciary. So if the fiduciary does not request it, either because of confusion of the tax forms or they didn't have an advisor to assist them, there is still a closure period after 3 years if that is not affirmatively requested.
Okay, and that replaces... Was there a statute of limitations before these other changes inadvertently made, deleted some of these things?
Yes, there was, Madam Chair.
And it was 3 years?
Yes.
Okay, all right. Well, any other questions from the committee? I sure know who's carrying this. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We will close the... Anybody else want to talk on this? We will close the public hearing on House Bill 2308 and open a work session on House Bill 2308. Senator Rosenbaum.
Yes, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2308 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Rosenbaum has moved House Bill 2308 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Telfer.
I just want to declare a potential conflict of interest. I've been named as personal representative for numerous clients and people, so
okay.
This will affect me.
Okay.
Thank goodness.
Thank goodness. Okay. Are there any objections? Okay. So ordered. Conflict noted for the record. Potential conflict by Senator Telfer. Okay. Senator Telfer, I was going to ask you to carry this. If you would rather not because of your conflict, I would understand. I think you could probably...
I don't have a problem with carrying it and noting my conflict.
Perfect. So. Okay. Done. Okay, committee, reminder, last reminder, tomorrow is D-Day, F-Day, forecast day.
Oh.
I had to clear that up really quick here.
Tomorrow's pole pedal paddle or something.
The forecast, you cannot go to Bend for the pole pedal paddle until after the forecast. And you'll need the exercise, I'm sure, after the forecast. So with that, we are adjourned.